Boeing does better than analysts expected in the second quarter. An industry analyst predicts two airlines face a liquidity crisis next year. And the NTSB is investigating a near miss at Chicago O'Hare. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, July 24th, 2008. Boeing's second quarter financials were released as scheduled yesterday. The company reported a net income of $852 million, or $1.16 per share. That's down 19% from the $1.05 billion earned in last year's second quarter. The number split the difference between the predictions of pessimistic analysts and Boeing's own more optimistic guidance. The Wall Street Journal reports Boeing's earnings per share dropped 14%, mainly due to delays in the defense system side's airborne early warning and control program. That converted 737-700, known in Turkey as the Peace Eagle and in Australia as the Wedgetail, won't begin customer deliveries till sometime next year, 3 years later than originally projected. Boeing took a $250 million pre-tax charge related to that delay. Boeing commercial airplanes saw a decline of only 1.6%, but increased its overall backlog by 8%, logged 187 new gross orders for the quarter, and now says it still expects to meet its goals for 2008 and 2009 earnings. Find more detail in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating a near mid-air collision at Chicago O'Hare International Airport, in which a regional jet was apparently directed to take off into the path of landing traffic. The board says that on Monday at 12:47 p.m. Central Time, an Embraer ERJ-145 operating as American Eagle Flight 298 was departing runway 32 left, while a Learjet LR-60 was landing on runway 9 right. ATC saw the converging paths on radar and advised the local controller to instruct the Lear to go around. The ERJ was instructed to stay low on departure. Analysis of radar replays reveals the Learjet passed 325 feet above and slightly behind the departing ERJ. There were no reported injuries or damage to the aircraft. Already, new procedures have been implemented for arrivals to runway 9 right, requiring specific coordination between approach control and the tower regarding whether 9 right is in use. A preliminary report will be available on NTSB.gov later this week. In sharp contrast to recent predictions by U.S. Airways CEO Doug Parker, UBS Airlines analyst Kevin Crissey told investors on Monday that U.S. Airways and AirTran top his list of carriers likely to have a tough time raising cash and paying their bills going forward. Crissey gives each a 59% chance of facing a liquidity crisis before the end of 2009, according to a post on the Wall Street Journal's From the Middle Seat blog. As ANN reported, Parker told the Philadelphia Inquirer recently that both the industry and his airline would get smaller but would pull through. Quote, "If there are other airlines whose strategies are based on U.S. Airways going away, they'd better find a different strategy," unquote. Arne Hawk, chief financial officer at AirTran, notes Crissey's numbers are for 2009, but failed to take into account recent measures AirTran has taken to shore up its finances. Hawk says the airline will disclose the highest quarterly cash position it's ever had when it reports earnings later this month. Since Crissey prepared his remarks, second quarter reports which beat analyst predictions and falling oil prices have prompted a huge rally in airline stock prices. MarketWatch reports share prices are up a whopping 80% for the industry as a whole just this week. The airlines are demonstrating that even a financial loss is good news if analysts have driven expectations low enough. Northwest Airlines, which is in the process of being acquired by Delta, announced on Wednesday a second quarter net loss of $377 million. That included a write-down of the company's goodwill value, essentially acknowledging its assets have lost $547 million in value. Offsetting that write-down was an increase of $250 million in the value of Northwest's fuel hedges. So why did Northwest stock gain 15% on Wednesday alone? Bloomberg reports there are two reasons. First, the company's loss was not as severe as analysts expected. Without considering the write-down and fuel hedges, the quarterly loss would have been only $80 million. Second, September oil contracts finished the day below $125 a barrel. That's a level not seen since June 5th. Falling oil prices are buoying the entire airline industry. Also improving the outlook for investors, Delta said last week that cost savings achieved through the merger, originally estimated at $1 billion a year by 2012, are now expected to reach $2 billion annually if fuel prices remain high. The average cost paid by Northwest for jet fuel leapt 69% from 2007's second quarter. Jet fuel now exceeds labor as the airline industry's largest expense category. Up next on ANN, NTSB wants weight and balance refreshers for crews of Bombardier Challengers. Boeing will acquire a small UAV Pioneer. And will your roof hold together if it starts raining aluminum? You're listening to AeroNews.
Okay. Right up front, let me say that Garmin does not give tax advice. We have lawyers who cringe at the very thought of suggesting there might be tax advantages to buying a new Garmin avionics system this year.
Did he say tax advantages?
Could that be construed as tax advice, either express or implied?
Yeah, like I said, lawyers. So I guess I won't be telling you that this year Congress is offering special bonus depreciation up to 50% in year one for qualified business equipment placed in service during 2008. Business equipment like, say, a new Garmin avionics stack. But you didn't hear that from me, right?
What did he just say?
Okay, better check with your tax consultant for guidance and your Garmin dealer for the installation. Garmin. Follow the leader.
See your tax advisor for guidance.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for July 24th, 2008. I'm Paul Platt. With all the redundant safety checks an airliner goes through before takeoff, you'd think something as basic as weight and balance would not be an issue. But the NTSB wants the FAA to require more training in balance and trim for crews of Bombardier Challenger jets following analysis of an accident. The board determined that in the February 2, 2005 takeoff crash of a Challenger at New Jersey's Teterboro Airport, the probable cause was loading that produced a center of gravity well forward of the takeoff limit, which prevented the airplane from rotating at the expected rotation speed. Quote, they found that in the mistrim scenario, with the CG at the most forward limit and with the horizontal stabilizer at the nose-down limit of the takeoff green band, the airplane did not rotate, even with full nose-up elevator control, until it was significantly above the nominal rotation speed, unquote. The board worries this phenomenon could lead pilots to abort takeoffs at speeds well above the takeoff decision speed, with possible catastrophic results. The recommendations include new language in an advisory circular on the mistrim issue and additional training for crews on stabilizer trim settings. You can find the complete text of the recommendations at aero-news.net. Boeing yesterday announced an agreement to acquire In-Situ Incorporated, described as a leader in the design, development, and manufacture of high-performance, low-cost, unmanned aerial systems for intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance. The two companies have partnered since 2002 and together developed the Scan Eagle UAS program, which is more than 100,000 operational flight hours now with the U.S. Department of Defense and international customers. Boeing says In-Situ's technologies and advanced capabilities in rapid prototyping and manufacturing are driving its revenue to an anticipated $150 million this year, 70% higher than last year, and have it well positioned for the future. Terms of the deal were not disclosed. The cash transaction is expected to close by the end of September following regulatory approvals, and Boeing's financial guidance remains unchanged. In-Situ will remain a separate subsidiary, retaining an independent operating model while benefiting from Boeing's vast resources. Often, it's instructive to piece together the decision chains that lead to aircraft accidents. Other times, you could lose count of the links. The Palm Beach Post reports that 51-year-old Laurent Gillot is expected to recover after being pried from the wreckage of his Cessna 402B after crashing it into the new town hall in Ocean Ridge, Florida on Tuesday. The plane skipped off the roof of the building, leaving a hole in it, then hit a utility pole on crowded Boynton Beach. The FAA is investigating the status of Gillot's medical certificate. The agency says its last record of his renewing was dated July 2004. FAA spokeswoman Kathleen Bergen says it's possible, but rare, that the agency simply has an error in its records. Officials plan to ask Gillot for documentation of his most recent physical, after he gets out of the hospital, that is. Of course, it's also possible that the question about his medical status has something to do with his 24 traffic tickets in the last 11 years, including one for driving with an open alcohol container. That one was not prosecuted. Life just isn't going smoothly for Gillett. The plane he crashed was not his. It was once, but FAA records show he sold it for $50,000 to someone named John Byerdell after going bankrupt in 2006 due to failed investments in housing developments. Byerdell, however, is not a pilot, and his brother tells the paper he's not aware of any airplane in the family. The case will certainly be investigated, but at first look, the NTSB and FAA may have to take a number. A Continental Airlines 737 with 118 passengers on board, including seven members of Congress, made an emergency landing Tuesday after a reported loss of cabin pressure. ABC News reports oxygen masks popped out shortly after the airliner reached cruising altitude on a flight from Houston to Washington, D.C. A congressional source said the crew put the 737 into a steep dive to reach more breathable altitudes. The airliner made a safe emergency landing in New Orleans. The cause is under investigation. A similar loss of cabin pressure forced a DC-9 to make an emergency landing in Madison, Wisconsin on Monday. In Tuesday's case, Continental rebooked passengers on other flights to D.C. Ironically, all seven Texas congressmen arrived too late to cast their votes on an aviation safety bill. Still ahead, Clifford Development flies its new Citation hot rod. Northrop Grumman makes lemonade out of KCX delays. And the NASA Golden Anniversary Party comes to Oshkosh. You're listening to Aero News.
An easy flight is a safe flight. That's why L3 Avionics Systems designed the most advanced glass cockpit system available to be intuitive and easy to use. The SmartDeck integrated flight controls and display system shows you what you need to know when you need to know it, because the system was created around the way pilots fly. With SmartDeck, interaction between pilot and aircraft is fluid, and advanced technology puts you in control with an extra layer of safety. Fly SmartDeck to get the ultimate glass cockpit experience at AirVenture or visit smartdeck.com.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 GTS. Go ahead, indulge yourself. The SR20 GTS provides entry-level luxury into the world of Cirrus, yet at a price that makes indulgence affordable. When friends, family, and business associates experience the versatility, freedom, and sheer fun of flying in your Cirrus, they'll see that it maximizes the most precious commodity of all, time. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. One reason that they can say that is because of Clarity Aloft's flexible boom arm. This featherweight band is the same one sported by stage musicians and performers the world over. Balance and comfort are the result of its elegantly simple design. The mic boom is easily repositioned for eating and drinking during flight without disturbing your earpieces. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, July 24th, 2008. I'm Paul Platt. Clifford Development announced this week the first flights of a Citation S550 equipped with Williams International FJ-44 3A engines from Michigan's Kalamazoo Battle Creek International Airport. The flights are being made and working toward an STC to certify the S-550 with new engines, and if Clifford's estimates are accurate, this is going to be some upgrade. Based on computations using the General Aviation Synthesis Program developed by NASA, Clifford projects the re-engined Citation S-550 will get to flight level 430 in 27 minutes, up from the original's 1 hour and 47 minute steep climb profile, achieve a 40% increase in range with four passengers, gain 34% in single engine climb rate, and get a 20% improvement in fuel efficiency. In the coming weeks, the certification airplane will move to Mojave Airport to begin 100 hours of test flights to verify performance and meet the FAA's requirements. The company anticipates the issuance of an STC in the early fourth quarter of this year. The price for the conversion, including engines, engine core credit, digital engine instrumentation, winglets, Clifford Development Aircraft Improvement Package, installation labor and training, is $2,275,000 for 2008 installations. Seeing the faces in the windows of stock S-550s as you embarrass them on climb-out? Priceless. As the U.S. Air Force prepares to request proposals a third time for a new aerial tanker, Northrop Grumman and Eads are working hard to demonstrate to the military that their entry in the race represents lower risk than Boeing's KC-767. The latest notch on the belt is an announcement that Northrop's Advanced Aerial Refueling Boom System has performed multiple aerial contacts with an operational AWACS aircraft, confirming its ability to support large aircraft in U.S., NATO, and Allied air forces. Ironically, the delays frustrating execs at Northrop and Eads are being leveraged in the company's campaign for their plane. Paul Meyer, Northrop Grumman VP and General Manager of Air Mobility Systems, said, quote, "The Air Force has clearly stated they need this capability as soon as possible to replace the aging KC-135 fleet, and we offer the lowest risk, most capable solution now," unquote. By law, the choice of a new tanker must not consider how many U.S. jobs will be created. That's an issue frustrating Boeing's supporters in Congress. However, the independent committee which will choose a design will account for development risks in weighing the proposals, and Northrop has made much of the fact that Boeing has not yet built or tested the KC-767's refueling boom. EAA Air Venture celebrated its 50th anniversary a few years ago. This year, NASA will celebrate its own golden anniversary at Oshkosh. Air Venture runs for a week starting on Monday. NASA Administrator Michael Griffin says, quote, "I'm looking forward to being a part of the world of flight that comes together each year at Oshkosh. EAA has long been a supporter of NASA as we have shared passion for innovation and flight," unquote. Griffin, by the way, doesn't just fly a desk at NASA. He's a CFI with instrument and multi-engine ratings and the co-owner of a small aircraft. He'll speak on Tuesday, the 29th, at 11:30 a.m. Central in Forum Pavilion 6 at Whitman Regional Airport. NASA will also have a special anniversary display in the EAA Air Venture Museum and a traveling exhibit parked near Exhibits Hangar E. Artifacts on display will include gloves from the Apollo era, space shuttle tiles and tires, a launch entry suit, and a Mars rover model. Visitors will also see models of the next-generation space vehicles, the Ares rockets and Orion capsule, which are being developed to return humans to the moon. You can find out more at www.nasa.gov. Finally, we're all aware of how much planning pilots and EAA staffers do for Air Venture, but can you imagine what the FAA has to do to be ready? The agency will start considering changes for 2009 as soon as this year's event ends. Every day of Air Venture at 6 a.m., EAA flight line operations crews and the FAA controller crews have a pre-shift briefing at the control tower. The evening crews have another one at 1 p.m. At 2 p.m., the morning crews reassemble to discuss problems encountered during their shift, so the evening crews can fix the problems on the fly. The evening crews have their debriefing after the field closes for the day. The day after Air Venture is over, members of the FAA management team and the EAA flight line operations staff meet to discuss what went right, what went wrong, and discuss lessons learned for next year. A month later, in September, the same groups meet separately to brainstorm changes with input from pilot and EAA feedback. Among the improvements which have come from the process have been the colored dots on the runways that help pilots and controllers coordinate separation during landings. The detailed NOTAM, published every year ahead of the event, takes all this analysis of prior experience into account. Hint, hint, read it. And don't forget to fill out your feedback form. I'm arriving on a commercial flight this year, but if I was flying into Whitman and filling out a feedback card, I know one comment I'd make. If the FAA is capable of this kind of efficiency in solving problems, how come we're not getting next gen done? That's the latest from Aero News. Hey, 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 come on now. We all think it, I just get to say it. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell and Managing Editor Rob Finfrock are already sweating away in our mobile office at Whitman Field. Today, Jim kicks off our coverage of Air Venture by chatting with Cirrus Design's Alan Klapmeyer about the company's new jet, which finally has a real name, Vision, and the SRS Light Sport, both of which are going to be on display this year at Air Venture. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our Aerocasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.